Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
In 3 days, you are going to be listening to Bump along with Brock Huer, Dave Wyman, Bob Stelton, breaking down round one of the NFL draft. It's finally here. Matt, do we have the little draft chime somewhere? I want to just like start interjecting it in the show wherever you see fit. Good to hear it. Bump, you guys are going to be hearing a lot of that, 32 of those on Thursday, as will fans. So we have 3 days of kind of this final countdown leading into it of what we think they could do, what we think they should do, what their needs are, trying to get all of you guys ready. Here to help us now, Seahawks radio analyst Brian Walters joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Brian, happy Monday. How's it going?
Hey, happy Monday, guys. Good to be back on with you.
We are happy to have you on. Bump and I have been going over some new mock drafts from the weekend. The latest from ESPN has Troy Fautanu going to Seattle. No surprise. He's most commonly mocked. They have him at 20, though. You think he falls that far?
You know, he could. I hope he does. That'd be best case scenario for the Seahawks, obviously, because hopefully they, you know, trade back a few spots and maybe they get an extra pick somewhere else in the draft that can fill one of these needs they have. But, you never know. I mean, that would be ideal. And, you know, John Schneider is doing his best to work on all case scenarios because, I mean, obviously he's the safe pick. He's the pick that we know we need to bolster the offensive line and get some help in there. If he can get in there and play guard right away, that's obviously where he'd be. And we saw him move. I mean, I think that was pro day or the combine drills. I mean, he went viral for that, just how that big guy could move like that. I mean, a plus it would be to have an athlete like that on your offensive line. If he falls to 20, fantastic. That means the Seahawks were able to trade back and then get someone else later on in the draft. But that's the easy pick. If he does fall, that's the easy pick. Now, you wouldn't hold anything back, though, from John Schneider thinking it's going to be the easy pick all the time, right? You know, as a Seahawk fan, you know, we always speculate, oh, this is a must. You have to get this position. And then he goes and does something that you would never see coming, just like last year with Devin Witherspoon. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked. You see a guy like Cooper DeJean, available, and you get that guy because now you have three just all-world corners and you have a punt returner. And we forget that DJ Dallas is gone now, and you need to fill that returning spot, someone who's back there and sure-handed and who's proven he can do it. So that would be kind of the fun pick, in my opinion, that no one would really see coming.
B Weezy, what's good, man?
What's up, Bump?
Good to hear from you, man. Before I ask football, man, I got to ask you about my guy Scotty Scheffler, man. What you think about his dominance on the course right now? It's crazy.
Him and Nelly Korda are just crushing it in both those leagues. I mean, it's wild. I don't know how they do that. You know, Bump, I came down here to Jacksonville for one of my tournaments I had this weekend, and I got all ready. I was playing well all week, and then first drive, boom, rope hook into the trees and never look back. So I don't know how he's so consistent. I want that.
It'd be like that. You know, I feel you. All right, let's get to football. Stacey's rolling her eyes at me. I'm not even looking at her, but I
just
can feel her. You're like when your
slightly.
Mom just stares
it's,
at you.
It's
you
not know? It's not at you, Brian. It's not at you.
Man, I was hoping to change this into a golf conversation.
Hey, you know, hey, podcast coming. Let's go, B. Hey, but back to foosball, man. So if Troy isn't there, man, my thing behind this is, okay, you go ahead and get the best available defensive player if Troy Fautanu isn't there. What are your thoughts on that, and what would be your approach if you get to 16 or 20? I don't think they back up to 20 unless they know for sure Troy's going to be there. But say you get to 16 and Troy's not there, what's your angle when it comes to drafting?
No, and you want me to go defense here. Is that what
you're saying? What would you say? What would you do? Me, I'm going best defensive player. What does B. Weezy do?
Yes. No, I do like best defensive player, and that's where I kind of brought up, you know, Cooper DeJean, I would say his name wrong, because, I mean, he would be just that lightning bolt in there, and he'd give you that 1-2-3 corners that are all, that, you know, would be stack up to anybody in the league. You need linebackers. I mean, when you look at this roster, we really need those guys in the middle. You lose Jordan Brooks, you lose Bobby Wagner, and now you're replacing with, you know, Jerome Baker and Dotson. But those guys are on like a 1 year kind of prove it, you know, rental almost, you know, with, for lack of a better term. And that's not always ideal because now they do go out there and they perform this year, but now they're expecting, you know, high dollar the next year, right? Because they perform their contract and they prove they could do it. But the thing is, this draft isn't that deep for that those middle linebackers, right? So ideally, like we said, I think you take Troy no matter what, and you hopefully you get an extra pick maybe in the second or third round. I don't know how you maneuver that. And then you pick one of these linebackers. The guy I'm always looking at is Peyton Wilson at NC State. He's a big guy, big linebacker, 6'4". He's got the long arms, and you know he's not going to be pushed around in the middle, and I like that guy. He's not going to be a first rounder though, so that doesn't answer your question, Bump. So I'm avoiding that question. I think it's talked about a lot. The guy out of Alabama, what's his name? Dallas Turner, is that right?
Yeah.
Dallas Turner. I mean, he's the elite guy there, but he's not going to be there. There's no way he's going to be there. He's too elite, and he's not going to make it past to 16. I can't see that happening. So. To me, it's Troy. Troy is the answer. If you got to go defense and someone's there, it's Cooper out of Iowa. I like him. Fills your punt returning need, and I'm biased toward that Bump.
If Troy was still available at 16 and the Seahawks were on the board, and then we get, Adam Schefter tweets, Seahawks have traded back, how surprised would you be, and would you think it was the wrong decision?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all, and I wouldn't think it's the wrong decision. I think they've done a lot of research, and they know kind of what they want, what the guys they have. And at this point, I think you do have quite a few holes, and I think you have some holes in some of the positions that it's not as strong in this draft, or at least when I say not as strong, not a lot of guys like linebacker, like safety, and well, I guess offensive line, but you can afford to pick guys later on. A lot of the best are going to fall into the second or third round. You're talking middle linebackers and safeties. And so maybe that's a risk they want willing to take that, they're grabbing give up their first round and get a couple in the second or whatever it is. And you're able to fill some of those holes with the best guy available at that spot.
Geno is the guy until he's not the guy is what John Schneider says. You got Sam Howell over there as well, but I think they're going to walk away from this draft be with a quarterback. I prefer they go late, but if Michael Penix is sitting at 16 looking pretty, man, are you intrigued by that? Would you roll the dice and say, okay, let's draft Penix and now ship Sam Howell away for future draft picks or something like that? What do you think about the quarterback situation?
No, I think the quarterback situation is fine. I do like Geno. I like Geno with a healthy offensive line in front of him. I don't think we really saw that all last year. We saw him trying to do things that, Geno's not expected to do. If you can get a healthy offensive line, Geno's your guy. There's no questions asked. I remember the game last year, against the Commanders, and we saw Sam Howell play, and man, we were all impressed by him. I mean, he threw some passes with guys in his face, maneuvering, and he was slinging that thing, Bump. So I like Sam Howell. I do. I think he kind of is a complete package, and I think their quarterback room this year is upgraded from last year. Even though Geno's still the guy, but I think Sam Howell, no knock on Drew Lock, but I think he's a much better quarterback than Drew Lock. So I think, yes, they draft a quarterback late. You got to have that third guy in there. You might get him on practice squad later. You might make the roster if he overperforms. So I think that's the way they go, at least this year. Next year, I think, is a completely different story.
In their first return from the Russell Wilson trade, the Seahawks were looking at pick number 9, where they stood, firm and took Charles Cross. We all loved the decision, thought it was right. The following year, they had pick number 5, and we were all thinking, please don't trade back. This is the highest you've drafted under John Schneider. And they didn't. It was a bit more surprising pick, though. They needed an offensive lineman, a tackle. They didn't need a corner, but both ended up being great picks. Pick number 16 is kind of different. It's not a top 10. It's not 5. It's also not the bottom of the first round. And Brian, John Schneider was talking about how it's kind of a weird spot. What to you makes the middle of the first round kind of unique?
Yeah, because you're not drafting those, as they would call them, locks or sure on stars in the NFL. Those top 5, top 10 guys where you just almost know what you're going to get, with lack of, obviously there's some busts in there. But now you get to, you don't know exactly who's going to be available either when you're at 16. You don't know how early some of these guys are going to go or who's going to fall. You always have that guy who falls back a long way, and it's unexpected that he's there. So I think you kind of have to be on edge and on lookout for that sleeper there that is unexpectedly available at the time. So you could totally change your draft process you know, you could have one guy here's where we're going. Number 16, this is our guy we're going after. And let's say it's Fotano. And then all of a sudden Brock Bowers is available. You know, maybe Brock Bowers falls back to 16 and they're like, well, this could be quite the asset to have on our team. Unexpected him to fall back that way, but it's hard to pass up a guy like that. So I think you got to be ready to just kind of call an audible at any time because you never know who's going to fall back further than you expected.
Now, B, there's no way I was going to have you on this show. We're going to have you on this show, and we ain't going to talk receivers, man. You know, we got to get some receiver talk going, man. Marvin Harrison is people are saying is the best receiver in this draft. You got Malik Nabers, you got Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas, and then it kind of gets mixed up after that. I like Ladd McConkey out of Georgia. One of my sleepers is Malachi Corley out of Western Michigan. How do you sort this thing out? I believe, and a lot of people are against me with this, and they're calling me a homer, even though I did not. I don't get down with the purple and gold. I think Rome is the best receiver in this draft. I understand Marvin Harrison, the pedigree, the route running, all that good stuff. I even understand Malik Nabers. But there's an argument for all these guys. Just how do you look at this wide receiver group this year? It's supposed to be one of the deepest in this draft in the last, what, 5 or 6 years, they're saying. Just talk to me about receivers, whatever's on your mind, and who you like.
Well, I always think receivers are the most fun position to talk about come draft day because these guys are – receivers, like no other position almost, are the guys expected to go in right away and have a big year, right? You know, for the most part, you're drafted one overall or top five receiver, you're getting thrown in there. You're the number one, number two guy. You're getting all the targets right away. And so I think that's the most fun thing. People don't expect a huge learning curve from some of these guys in the top five, top 10. I mean, Marvin Harrison obviously is the number one guy and he'll go first, but I think our, you know, your boy over there at UW, I guess maybe your boy isn't at UW. but Rome, I think he's got the best ball skills. I really do. The way he goes up and high points the ball and makes some of these catches, and it shows his, you know, his body control and some of the, you know, some tip balls and everything. So I think he's going to be awesome. And you know what? Let's say by chance he falls to 16. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Seahawks grab him either.
Wee. Spicy. Whoa. I like that.
Imagine back-to-back years of first-round wide receiver. I mean, at that point, oh, man. At that point, you have no excuse but to start making your – like, if they take an offensive weapon, so not a tackle. Let's say Brock Bowers falls. Let's say Roma Dunze falls, and they take an offensive weapon. What's your expectation for the offense in terms of top 10 points scored, top 10 yardage? Like, how does the expectation change?
Well, I mean, a guy like Brock Bowers, I mean, I feel like run your offense almost around him, and he can do it all, big boy, tight end. But I still expect this off. I mean, you still have, no matter if they don't pick an offensive weapon versus if they do pick an offensive weapon with that first pick, you still have a bunch of weapons. You know, we're going to have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and JSN all on the field at the same time. You know, you're going to have, I thought Noah Fant really came on at the end of last year, started making plays and I think that showed why they were able to part with like a Colby and a Will Disley, because they knew what they had with Fanton and they wanted him. They didn't want that split time anymore. You know, I think they want him to be their guy. But I just, I think that they, that's it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but if it did, fantastic. But I think the offense is going to be in a good spot with a healthy offensive line. I'm going to keep saying that over and over again, because last year was so tough with the offensive line, all the change-ups and everything. If this offensive line can stay healthy, this offense is going to be in a good spot, no matter who they take with this first overall pick.
All right. He is Seahawks analyst. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Brian Walters, thanks so much for joining us, Brian.
Thanks, B.
Hey, thanks for having me. See you guys.
All right, we haven't talked a ton of Mariners today, but coming up at noon, one of our favorite guests, Yahoo Sports Jordan Schusterman, is joining us. Can't wait to talk about the Mariners kind of turning things around in their last two series with him right now, though. Sticking with football, X's and O's talk with Michael Bumpus. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, well, there may be a trade after all. Brandon Ayuk's been granted permission to seek trade offers from other teams. Who do you think should make a move?
If the Niners do make a move with Brandon Ayuk, you got to get him out the conference. I don't think you give him to anybody that you have to see, especially in the division or in the playoffs until you get to the Super Bowl. The first team I'm looking at, the team that gave up a number one receiver because of his attitude, diva receiver. I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills. Mm. They need a number one receiver. They got the 29th pick in the first round, 60th overall. That's the second round, and 128 in the fourth round. What's Ayuk's value? I think he's a first round type of talent, yeah. All pro last year. So you might look at that 28 spot. Everyone expects them to draft a receiver anyway at that spot. The young man out of Texas, Xavier Worthy, I believe his name is. Why not go ahead and get something that's proven already and holler at Brandon Ayuk? Next team I'm looking at, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've done a great job this offseason acquiring a whole bunch of talent, right? You got Patrick Queen over there, obviously bringing the quarterbacks. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields to battle this thing out, and a couple other guys too. You look at the Steelers and say, and it's, I wrote this question down, and then this morning I read an article with Mike Tomlin saying, we're not going to be thirsty when it comes to free agency. Yeah, right. If you got Brandon Ayuk available and he is willing to go
you're
to Pittsburgh
desert.
And you got you have the 20th pick in the draft. We just talk about the 20th yep. pick. You got to look at that situation and say, let's give our quarterbacks the best opportunity to be successful. So I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The next team I'm looking at, the New England Patriots. They don't have a dude over there. You don't even have a quarterback. They got the number three pick in the draft. I'm not saying give up number three to get Brandon Ayuk. Crazy talk. All right, don't do that. But you got to go get yourself a receiver. You got Kendrick Bourne. You got DeMario Douglas. You got KJ Osborne. Bourne has had a couple good games, especially against Seattle Seahawks when he was with the 49ers. He seems to ball out whenever he plays against them. But those are my three teams. New England needs a quarterback, but they also need receiver talent. The Steelers have had a great offseason acquiring talent. They could use another receiver to team up with George Pickens. And then the Buffalo Bills, who lost one of the best receivers, or traded away one of the best receivers in the game, and Stephon Diggs could definitely use the services of Brandon Ayuk.
Second down. I am so curious about your answer to this question. What do you hope Mike McDonald has the confidence and courage to do early in his head coaching career?
Now, this was inspired by something I heard from Tyreek Hill, who's on a podcast, $1 million worth of game, I believe. And he said there was a play where Snead just jams him to the ground, puts him in the dirt. And McDonald says, is this what we're paying you for? You're supposed to be the best player in the league, right? You got to make those plays. We can't be having this. Why are we paying you so much if you're going to do this? Now, that's tough to do. You got to have a good relationship with your players to do that, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're
this
calling
is
out. This is McDaniels.
And he was a new head coach.
Exactly. And you're calling out one of the best receivers in the game. I think that establishes a tone when you can do that. And I read that story, then I heard about how Bill Belichick would do the same thing and highlight the bad plays. Pete Carroll did the same thing by highlighting some of the bad plays. But to call out one of your best players on the team and set the tone, I think is beautiful. Now, you got to understand who you're talking to and hope that that athlete is able to accept that type of coaching. There's some guys you just don't do that with because they're thin-skinned, emotional. They just can't handle it. But I think if Mike McDaniel, I'm not saying necessarily do something like that, but do something in a way that establishes a tone and says nobody is free from critique. We've already taken down pitchers, and I'm catching strays from future Hall of Famers maybe about my decision-making. I'm going to stand in front of the team and say, look, no one is exempt from being held accountable. I love that McDaniels did that in Miami. I hope that Mike McDonald does it in his way here in Seattle because change is here. Why not start fresh and start by calling out your players if they're not doing what they're supposed to do?
That's a good answer. I got to go back and listen to that podcast. I can't believe McDaniel did that in his first year.
Hey.
Third down. The draft is in a few days. No one really knows what the Hawks will do. But if they were to trade back, what scenario intrigues you the most?
All right, so I got this from, SportsIllustrated.com, right? And they threw out some scenarios. We talked about one. Seahawks trade number 16 to Steelers to get number 20 and number 84. Another scenario, the Philadelphia Eagles, they trade number 16 to get 102. Exchange for pick number 22 and pick number 53. Another scenario, Dallas Cowboys, they trade 16 and 18 to Cowboys in exchange for 24 and 56. And then the last one, you got them trading with the Packers for 25 and 58. Oh, one more in there. My bad, I forgot about this one. Now they trade number 16 for the Bucks for number 26 and 57. So out of all those teams, Stacey, you got the Bucks, you got the Packers, you have the Cowboys, you have the Eagles, and you have the Pittsburgh Steelers. I want to trade to the team that I'm not going to see often, and that doesn't have the potential to go ahead and win a Super Bowl. So what teams are those? I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think the Bucs got a lot to do over there. They did sign Baker Mayfield. He's got things going. But those two intrigue me. Other than that, I'm saying stay far away from that. Mm-hmm. And then they also threw the Bills in there as well. But with the Bills, you get pick number 28, 60, and 163. More picks there, but I'm not for making great teams even greater.
Yeah. Fourth down. He doesn't really touch alcohol unless it's avocado tequila. Strawberries are a dessert. He stays away from sugar and processed foods. But why else is Tom Brady a better man than you,
Bob? He's a better man. I mean, goodness, he's got 7 Super Bowl championships. Yeah. I guess that's great.
That's one of them. I mean, it's one part
he
of
married,
it.
He married a supermodel. I love my wife, but, you know, supermodel. That was great. Ended in divorce, but okay. But
he's not married to a supermodel. He's
not. I don't know. Is it official? Yeah, the paper's already done.
I think it's a fish.
It's official? Okay. But on May 5th, apparently, he's going to stand there and let people roast him in a public roast. I cannot do that. I cannot handle that.
No, you could.
I don't know, man. That's the reason why I would never do reality TV. You know that one time I went on the Ellen Show, right? Back in like 2010, 11, something like that. They called me back and asked me if I would be in this pilot reality TV show type deal.
What?
And I was like, nah, I'm good.
What?
I'm good.
You've never mentioned this?
I don't want to see my flaws. I don't want to see my flaws because I feel like I know most of them, but I don't want everyone else to see my flaws, too. I like who I am. I'm going to stay in my little box and do what I do. Stacey's so disappointed. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it.
I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a former athlete.
I'm not a celebrity either.
You were asked to be on a reality television show, and you said no?
Yeah, I said no. I was young at the time,
rule
too.
Rule number one of the show, Curtis.
Do it for the cloud.
Thank you.
But that was before this show existed.
That's true. That's very true.
Do it for the cloud.
Bump at 24, Stacey. Goodness gracious.
I think it would have been amazing TV. I would love if that would have been documented.
Were you and Jen married at the time?
Oh, yeah. We married. Yeah. I was still a mess.
When did you guys get married? You got married young.
Yeah, I got married at 24.
24. Okay, so you had just been married. Uh-huh. Oh, that would have been not good for the Bumpus household.
All bad.
To have a reality television show.
Yeah, you know.
Okay,
I was still going out with the boys and staying in LA.
Okay,
yeah.
It might have been a little messy.
All
and
bad.
Thankfully now you guys are happily married with 3 kids, so we dodged anything there. But I'm just disappointed there's not a reality show documenting a young, messy Michael Bumpus could have now. What's something, could you tell us off air your messiest moment that you're so glad cameras didn't catch?
Yeah, I can do that.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, I'm going to throw it a break now. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up, the Mariners were part of one of the most controversial calls over the weekend, plus a wild backstory about the Coyotes' social media. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. So let's get to one that broke just 3 minutes ago. Bump, I'm so sorry. Your boy's on the move. From Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, Zach Wilson has a new home. Former Jets starting quarterback and number 2 overall pick, Zach Wilson is on the move. Sources say he's being traded to the Broncos. Rappaport says the deal includes a late round pick swap, a 6th for a 7th, and the Jets will pay some of Wilson's roughly $5.5 million salary. So, new home for Zach Wilson. The Jets get a little bit of draft capital, mostly though they're just moving on because, look, he deserves a fresh start somewhere.
Zach Wilson is going to go over there and be the greatest quarterback in Denver Broncos history. My guy, Zach. I'm just playing.
No, there are two that pretty good.
No, but here's why I like this, though, because you can bring him over for 5.5, I believe is what he's getting. You can still draft yourself a quarterback and not have to force a young man to play right now. This is the way that most NFL teams should approach developing a quarterback. There's no more developing.
Mm-hmm.
In any other position, you get 2, 3, 4 years to try to figure some things out. At that quarterback spot, because of their responsibility, if you don't get it done within year one or year two, they're already moving on. Zach Wilson is a perfect example of that, plus plenty of others. Sam Darnold, I mean, the list goes on and on. So, no, I like this move. I think that the Denver has been rumored to want to move up in the draft to draft their quarterback as well. Mm-hmm. So what I like is whether they move up or stay at 12, you still have a quarterback who can start right now, and then you can let the young man marinate whoever you draft.
I saw a mock this morning that had Denver trading up to number 3 overall, and mm-hmm. we're going to get to some stuff a bit later during NFL headlines. Patriots have made it clear that they're willing to trade back. They do need a quarterback. Do you think Zach Wilson going to Denver makes it less likely they trade up to 3, or do you think that it's still completely possible that they make a big trade to move up?
I still think it's possible. Yeah. I think that when you are already slotted where they are in that draft and you have the picks that you have behind that and you're in the situation that you're in, you're not signing Zach Wilson to save your franchise. You're signing him to hold it down for a little mm-hmm. bit, maybe teach this young man how to be a quarterback. But if you're capable of moving up in this draft, which I think the top four, and even though I've said a lot about Drake May, I still think the top 4, 5, 6 quarterbacks in this draft are more than capable of leading franchises. You got an opportunity, you move up. But I love this move. Let Zach be the guy. You still got the other quarterback over there. Was it who's over there? Stidham? Is Stidham over there?
Jarrett Stidham, yeah. Stidham. He's the one that Russell was benched for.
You got options now. I like this move.
Well, and look, Zach, here's the deal. There will be another quarterback added, and if that quarterback is via a trade, J.J. McCarthy or Jaden Daniels or Drake May, just compete. You were not going to beat out Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
It is not set in stone that they wouldn't be willing to, yes, for their future franchise passer, that's going to be that guy, but let him sit for a year. Maybe let you start. Let him, like, kind of, you know, pick up ground and figure things out. The Broncos aren't in a compete from the outside looking in. Compete now, win now place. There is a ton of pressure to get back to the playoffs. They have a very long drought, but I mean, I would hope that someone like Zach Wilson is still embracing competition, because you're not getting away from it just because you're going to Denver.
No, and you can go to Denver, be the number one guy going into training camp and maybe hold it down for a few weeks or maybe even a year and give yourself a second chance in the NFL. Because he's going to be a backup in this league regardless. Mm-hmm. He's going to hang around for 10 years and do his thing. But it's always nice when guys get themselves in a good position, a Case Keenum, a Ryan Fitzpatrick, even a Jameis Winston sometimes, Geno here, and give yourself another opportunity to be a starter. You're always learning in this league, and he's still pretty young.
All right, next up. Now, the timeline sometimes is made up of things that's like, this is trending, this is developing, this is whatever. So take this for what it is. Michaela Perkins is director of social media for, I think it's Phoenix Sports, but it's PHNX_sports. It is, which is an official, like, you know, like verified, like Phoenix, you know, like sports outlet. She talks a lot about social media and different social media outlets for different sports teams. She's in sports social media. So this caught my eye over the weekend. She was talking about some drama happening with the Coyotes, and I think this is wild. She goes, I've tried to keep my thoughts on the Coyotes' social media to myself, but this is just atrocious. Unacceptable social media management, with a screenshot of the Arizona Coyotes saying, see you all next June 27th, #YotesForever. That post has since been deleted. She said, and I just wanted to clarify because I saw some information being misquoted. The owner of the Coyotes, the owner's son does in fact have access to social media and does frequently post to the Coyotes account and has done so for months. So she says the Coyotes didn't fire their social media department, but many of them quit and left for various reasons. So she goes on to talk about, like, you know, some other issues going on with the social media department. I am stuck on the owner's son, who is presumably not, like, a member. I need to do more research here, but I couldn't find it. The owner's son posting to the team's official Twitter account.
Hey, he got access.
Yeah, but that's not your job. At the end of the day, social media.
It's not right, but he got access.
But it's okay.
He's the owner's son. We're going to act like status doesn't play into this?
Oh, it absolutely does. It absolutely does, but you need to call it out.
Nah, you call it out. He's wrong for that, and that's probably one of the reasons why these people are starting to dip, too. They don't like the way that this organization is being ran. But, I think it's a bit funny. He shouldn't be doing it.
No, well, and it's like, maybe first of all, he could be part of this department and I just couldn't find it. Like, it's, you know, he could be part of, like, it sounds like he's somehow involved.
He's on the payroll.
He's
for
on
sure.
the payroll. He is on the payroll. So it's not like he's just, like, at home doing this, but I don't know that he's necessarily part of this department.
He's definitely at home doing it, though.
Well,
it's
Twitter. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, I know it's social media, but there are people who like study this and learn this, and it's their jobs to post to social media, and they study like fan engagement and all this stuff and marketing and like.
I got a social media department, and there is a calendar. We post this at this time and this at that time. He's messing up the operation for sure, but he's his dad run this.
But here's the deal: they tweeted out a tweet they shouldn't have sent and then deleted it, and that's what happens when you have people that are tweeting for professional sports organizations. And you have a social media department that is a fraction of the size it should be and is also featuring someone who shouldn't be in that department. You start getting gaffes. You start seeing tweets that you shouldn't see.
Yep.
Be professional.
Who authorized that?
Come on. Next up. A roast of Tom Brady. Bump mentioned this. Will be on air. Let's talk more about it, including where you're going to find it. It'll be live on Netflix on Sunday, May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific. Kevin Hart will serve as roast master. I have something to say. When Comedy Central used to do, and this is not a Comedy Central product, but when Comedy Central used to do their roasts of various talent, Charlie Sheen, Flava Flav, Pamela Anderson, all of these people had things that you could genuinely drudge up that were skeletons in their closet. Like things that you could make fun of them for that they had done that were either shameful or bad or easy to make fun of or maybe controversial. You're just making fun of a good-looking quarterback who's accomplished more than any other player in NFL history. And, like, what are you making fun of him for? The fact that he doesn't eat strawberries? Like, what? You know what I'm saying? Like, there is a difference between roasting people that have stuff that you can make fun of.
You're too kind.
I'm just, what are you going to make fun of Tom Brady for?
His marriage is going to be in forefront of that whole thing. They are going
to
lean into
that marriage.
I mean,
they have to. It's the only thing about him that's bad. Not that getting a divorce is bad, but the only thing about him that would sting is a divorce.
Deflategate. Nah, I can think of a couple. You have Deflategate.
What does he care about Deflategate? They went on to win Super Bowl 49. They won that Super Bowl.
Oh, it's not. You're too logical here. We're just giving you things they're going to talk about. They're going to talk about the NFL changing the rule for his knee. They're going to talk about him being AI. He don't look real no more. That jawline. Is too thick. They're going to talk about his body during the NFL draft. They're going to talk about the way he ran the 40. There are so many things to talk about.
I hope that it is really funny. I really do. But again, part of what made the Comedy Central roast so good and so kind of like cringeworthy at times is they would say stuff that frequently towed the line because it was stuff that was genuinely like Charlie Sheen having dealt with drug issues and alcoholism and custody issues.
Watch it. I guarantee you're going to cringe as well.
I hope so. I love cringe humor, and I hope that happens. Next up, last story. The official Coachella Twitter account, speaking of social media teams, mistook DJ Will Clark, who's going to be performing, with fellow former MLB All-Star Will Clark.
What the heck is going on?
Very different Will Clark. Very different Will Clark here.
Let's look at the pictures. Totally different. Dude, you got to do your homework there. This is just lazy. You know what? They need to work on their social media department and get this thing right. Quick question.
Yes.
Coachella's on my bucket list. When am I too old to go to Coachella?
No. I said that without thinking.
I'm still going.
Here's the deal. You are not. No one is too old to go to Coachella. I take it back.
Except Michael Bumpus.
If I went, going to Coachella now, I think that I would feel like when I go to the beer garden. You and I are not old. Okay. I don't think so.
No, I've been to the garden. I think so.
But there are places I go now that I never used to feel visibly old.
I think this is how I have to do it. Like, I got to go to Coachella and have, like, VIP. Like, I'm not in the mix with the kids.
There will be many, 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 many people much older than you that are there, but they're spending money.
Yeah. I just gotta drop some bands.
Yeah, you can't be like, we're sleeping in my car in the parking lot because we spent all our money
on
tickets. That's the 20-year-old
You know who I'm married to?
Yeah.
She ain't sleeping in no dang car.
Exactly. When you're in your 30s, Coachella is different. It's more expensive. It's a different experience.
Yeah, I got to save up for that.
It costs a pretty penny.
Matt, you're invited to this one. Not my birthday, though.
Oh, I'm busy that day, too. Sorry.
Matt, you're so... Why don't you ever want to just go...
You don't want
to
hang out with me,
you never want to hang out with Bump,
I don't know what
man.
I did to him.
I just don't want to hang out with anyone. That's nothing to do with Bump.
That's fair. You know what? That's fair. All right, you guys. We are switching gears here and going baseball for a little while. We haven't spent a lot of time on it, and we should. So... Jordan Schusterman is going to join us coming up at noon. You're going to love hearing from him if you haven't heard an interview with him before. He's got a ton of great insight and is, he has a podcast that covers national stories and national baseball news, but he knows plenty about the Mariners. So we're going to get a ton of insight and analysis there. Before we get to it, Jeff Passan was on with Brock and Salk this morning. We'll tell you the latest coming up next.
Bump and Stacey.
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Someone said of Brady, I said there's not a ton to roast him on. Chris and Puyallup, do you not remember Deflategate, his marriage, mouth-kissing his son? All of these are true, but after Deflategate, they won that Super Bowl. And his marriage ended, but it was to a Victoria's Secret supermodel.
That was a long time ago.
I know. That. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that there's a ton there for Brady. I would love to be wrong. I would love for
this. You think they would
be...
set this up if people didn't have material?
No. They absolutely have material. But what's sticking? Like, is there anything that's going to make you uncomfortable to hear?
No, we were talking off air, and you mentioned a whole bunch of other stuff, roasts that went down, and those were so uncomfortable that I changed the channel.
That's what I'm saying. I'm good. So maybe this is better, because it's not as, it's not as, like some of those other roasts, they were talking about stuff where you're like, I feel guilty laughing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't think we're going to have
any of
those.
I feel bad for that person. Like, check on that person after the roast.
Jordan Schusterman joining us in 15 minutes right now. We're taking a listen to the latest from Jeff Passan. MLB insider expert for ESPN was on with Brock and Salk this morning. So we're going to take a listen to some of what he had to say about a Mariners team that's turned things around. Let's start with the rotation.
It's very rare, but it's also not entirely unexpected. This is how the Mariners were going to win. Right. This is why people, myself included, were as bullish on them going into the season as they were, because they have the stuff to throw this way every time out. And look, we can talk all we want about the offense because it's been a mess. But the pitching, man, like the bullpen has been very good this year. And so if you look back at the pitching, it's been the rotation that's been the problematic thing for the first 10 or so games of the season. But man, it has righted itself, and since I came on last week.
Bump, pitching is not the only thing that matters. You obviously want to be able to complement that with enough offense to get things done, but it was especially disheartening, like Passan hinted at, to see the start to the season for the Mariners, because the one thing you thought would be elite, not good, elite, wasn't even average.
No, it It's shaky, and I think when a team starts the season the way that the Mariners have or did, I think that it's not okay, but you kind of understand that that's a possibility, because there's no team that hits the scene and they're just ready to go. Even the teams with the most talent are going to go through some things and try to figure some stuff out. The teams with mediocre talent, for the most part, I think that's how people would describe the Mariners. Is it realistic to have them come out and be, what, 8 games over .500 right now, or 7 games over .500? I don't think so. I think it was just the way that things were going down.
Yeah.
But the thing that's true, the stat that I look at the most when it comes to this pitching are just quality starts. Because to me, you get a quality start, your team has a chance.
Yep.
You go 6 innings and 3 or less runs scored, you got a chance. And those are the type of games that we're used to the Mariners being in. So it may not have started the way that we wanted to collectively, but when you look at just, for me, one of my favorite stats of quality starts, they're up there, second in the league with 12 quality starts. So they've been lit up a couple of times, but more often than not, they're giving this team a chance to win ball games.
I have two cuts that I think you, Bump, and listeners are really going to like hearing. The first is about Bryce Miller's potential. Jeff Passan asked if he thinks Bryce Miller, still young, could reach Kirby and Gilbert's level.
Yes. I think his stuff's really good. I think, and the thing is, like, adding pitches, you know, when a pitcher adds something, we tend to say, maybe it'll play, maybe it won't. We don't know. Adds the splitter this year, and it has become, out the gate, a very good pitch to start off with. And I understand he had his changeup, and he was thrown a curveball last year that he's more or less ditched this year. But man, the split for Miller could be a real game changer long term.
Now, Bryce Miller's your number four guy.
Mm-hmm.
If I hear from Jeff Passan, Bryce Miller has the potential to be at Kirby and Gilbert's level, who would be aces on some staffs, 2 and 3 on this staff. If your number four guy has number two guy potential, that's huge.
Yeah, that's scary, man. That is scary. And it's, I said this before, Bryce is the perfect example of the Mariners developing their pitchers. I don't know who decides when and if to add pitches. But once you start seeing guys add some pitches and not be afraid to use it and then execute that, you can only think this is just the start of it, right? This is just, he doesn't even really, I'm sure he has command of the pitch or he wouldn't throw it, but he doesn't have the command that he could have with some of these pitches. Mm-hmm. He's just getting going. So when you hear something like that, you hear Passan talk about a young arm like that, you better perk up and be excited.
Yeah.
You should perk up and be excited because I love potential. Potential, not everyone has it. You know, you and I have potential to do some things we're probably never going to do.
Okay,
right?
Well, everyone. I could still be a model and singer if I wanted to.
Everyone has potential, but it's about developing that potential, nurturing, and doing the things to get the most out of it. And it seems like the Mariners do exactly that with these arms.
Last minute, let's talk about the Astros for just a second. I'm going to play this cut from Jeff Passan. And then just tell me what you think about it, whether you're buying it, whether you believe it, whether you're too afraid to believe in it. Jeff Passan says he's starting to wonder if this is the year the Astros drop off.
I'm beginning to wonder if this is actually the year. Look, we've said that in the past. They've been to every American League Championship Series this decade and going back almost halfway to the last decade. So it's not like I'm going to count the Astros out now. But just when, you know, Justin Verlander comes back. Framber Valdez looks like he may be returning soon. Christian Javier hits the injured list. Jose Urquidy's there already. Luis Garcia's there already. Lance McCullers is there already. But beyond that, their bullpen's not been good. Their bullpen was supposed to be an extreme strength going into this season. The scariest part for the Astros is that Jose Altuve has been unbelievable and that Yordan Alvarez has been very good and that Kyle Tucker has been very good and that Jeremy Pena has been excellent. And despite those four guys all hitting like you expect them to, the Astros are still behind the A's in the standings.
They are in fifth place in the AL West. Where are you on this team right now?
It's tough because of what he said later in that clip is that Altuve is still balling. Yordan Alvarez has an OPS over 800. Pena has an OPS over 800. Kyle Tucker has an OPS over 800. You look at just the bats right now, and it makes no sense to you unless you know about the injuries they're going through when it comes to the arms and the bullpen or whatnot. I'm not there yet. I think that because of the experience this team has and the success that they have had, I don't think now I've listened to the Houston fan base panic a little bit, but we know panic. And they're hitting like that. I don't think it's time to panic yet.
Yahoo Sports, Jordan Schusterman joining us next.